This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
If you've been struggling with your weight, Mochi Health is here to help. Mochi Health is a long-term weight loss solution personalized to fit your unique needs and goals. Meet one-on-one with board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians who are on a mission to listen. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medications at an affordable set price and get them delivered to their home each month. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 at checkout for $40 off your first month of membership.
What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
June is Father's Day. What a better opportunity to talk about the father of Kansas City, John McCoy. My friend Diane Houston, the greatest Kansas City historian of all time, sits down with me as we discuss how Kansas City was founded and what the father of Kansas City did that really benefited everybody else in the town. Well, as we said, he is the father of Kansas City, John McCoy. You've probably heard of McCoy's Public House at one point in time down in Westport, and you probably walk around Westport. I know at least I did at times and wonder, who are these people, right? John McCoy is clearly the not only the founder of Kansas City, but also the founder of Westport to begin with. Diana, it's funny when you start to look at some of these folks and you wonder, how the heck did you end up here and just like start a city? Like, that sounds like the most incredible thing to do. I am now starting a city and I am the founder of this place.
Yeah, it is incredible to think that these people had the foresight to say, maybe this is a place where we can actually get people to settle. And it is an unbelievable story about how a guy who really, you know, pretty well educated for the time, was able to really establish himself and cities wherever he went. And I mean, it absolutely. Plus, obviously, work with people from all different backgrounds, which I think is also really important, because, you know, for being the guy who was probably one of the most well-educated, he certainly didn't make his fortune. We'll just put it that way, like the rest of them did. But he still, you know, goes down in Kansas City's history as being, you know, the father of both Westport and Kansas City, which is awesome.
Yeah, it is. And I think, you know, you say of Westport and of Kansas City, and today people would say, well, what's the difference? Westport is right. Part of Kansas City. But back then when he founded the place, Westport was not part of Kansas City. Kansas City didn't exist. It wasn't here. And Westport kind of became this outpost of like everybody heading west and kind of was its own city in and of itself.
Right. And so, yeah, so he really wanted to, I think because he had always lived in the wilderness, which is kind of, you know, his background comes from, he was born outside of Vincennes in Indiana in 1811. His father was a Baptist, you know, minister who was ministering to the Native American tribes. We've talked about him before, Isaac McCoy. And so, you know, you're growing up around Native American tribes. You're being educated by, you know, Johnston Lycan. So you get an education. But then after, you know, time goes on and the, you know, obviously the South has to do with Indian removal, John McCoy ends up moving to the, you know, this West, if you will, along with his family to help relocate these tribes and also plat out land of where they were going to live. So he kind of saw that there is, you know, he's obviously going to see where the trails are. So you have the Santa Fe Trail, the Oregon, the California Trail. And he had the instinct to know that not only could he do, I mean, you know, survey and do the stuff that he was doing, but he also could see that there was promise of a town to the west, because at the time, you know, the town of the area that was, you know, founded first was Independence. And Independence was founded literally as a, you know, jumping off point of the Santa Fe Trail. And so he sees this, but he's like, wait, but there's more out to the west. We should do something out to the west. And that's what kind of gave him his inspiration. Of course, nobody believed him at the time. He's like this kid. That's the other thing you have to keep in mind is we have enabled our children. Because this guy, the stuff he did as a kid is unbelievable. Like, he's born in 1811. He goes to school. So his dad sends him to Transylvania University. What a terrible name.
Did
right?
he become a vampire or something? Exactly. I mean, that's a crazy name for a school.
Educated by Vlad. Yeah. Uh-huh. No. So, yeah. So he goes to Transylvania University in Lexington, Kentucky. He's sent off there when he's like 14. And he starts studying surveying, which at the time was called mathematics, of course, because it's all, you know, engineering, basically. And his brothers had gone there and were being educated as doctors. That was kind of what the school was known for. But his dad was like, I need a surveyor. Like, I need you to do this. And so he finishes school. And again, things were different back then. He finishes college at 18. And then his dad entrusts him to take his sisters, 14 and 17 years old, from Fayette, Missouri. They had relocated at that point to Fayette, Missouri, so Howard County, Missouri, to take them back to Lexington for them to be educated at like a seminary. And so he's 18 years old. He takes his 14 and 17 year old sisters and literally makes the entire trip through the winter on horseback to Lexington, Kentucky, drops his sisters off, and then goes back to Fayette by himself. I mean, this is, and then he was going to Ohio and doing some other stuff for his dad. So he's obviously extremely independent and very well educated. And in 1830, he actually goes through Independence on a surveying expedition. So his dad, of course, at this point, he's a surveyor, and there, his dad was enlisted by the government, specifically Jackson, originally to remove the Native Americans. That's the Indian Removal Act of 1830. And so they're going to decide where these Native American tribes are going to relocate. And so in August 1830, John McCoy's like the kid of the expedition. He's 19 years old, you know, I mean, 19. And so they go through, and he actually goes through where what Fort Leavenworth is going to be, and they establish the boundaries. He actually helped plat Fort Leavenworth. I mean, he's 19.
Well, you keep saying that, and obviously this is an audio version of a podcast, but I'm sitting here shaking my head in almost disbelievement listening to you kind of talk about this, because think about when you were 19, if you can remember a day that you weren't drunk and passed out in a ditch like all of us were at the age of 19 in college.
Trying to make it to class by noon.
Yeah, like 19 back then is a lot different than what 19 is when we were growing up and you know, we're in that 40 range, and then you've got you know, the kids that are 19 today are probably even more like, I'm not doing anything like that, you know?
Right.
So the way that the generations have changed, 19 back then, you were a full-fledged adult and you were expected to act like a full-fledged adult, take on adult things, right?
Yeah, some of you at this point are dads.
Right. But also, too, when you think about it, back then, 19, you're probably about halfway through life back then with the life expectancy of people.
Right, true,
you know,
true.
With the age expectancy. So you're in middle age at the age of 19 and 20. So if you weren't found in a city by then, what the hell are you accomplishing?
That's right, true. But it is amazing when you think about, like, he spent his, I mean, just his life between 1830, he is with his father, I should say 1830 to 1840, that's more correct. He participated in 10 different surveys of Native American lands. So he's not just traveling. He's going like out into Kansas territory, out into the middle of nowhere. And it wouldn't have been Kansas territory. It's Indian territory. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just he had the insight to know that something was going to happen in the area. He's plotting Fort Leavenworth. He laid out a portion of the like Leavenworth town in 1846. He sees what's happening around him. And so when he gets back to the area, so the family, they now see that the boundary and the state line, literally at the western boundary of the country, is the state line of between Indian Territory and Missouri. And so his father ends up buying land where current day St. Luke's Hospital is, Hospital Hill, and builds a cabin there. And that's where John McCoy kind of goes, well, wait a minute, Dad, hey, can I have a little section of this land over here? I have an idea. And he decides, he thinks it's a better idea to establish another somewhat of a town to actually take traffic from Independence. So this would have been land that was on the Santa Fe Trail that would have passed by who had already been to Independence, if that makes sense. So it's like, hey, let's do another little outfitting post, in case you forgot something. We all know the road trips. You forget something on your way. Sure. Or you might lose a wagon wheel. You know, you got to stop and get your supplies. So he decides.
There is a Quick Trip on every single exit on I-70 from here to the end, you know, so.
Well, thank God for Quick Trip, though, right?
Right.
So he ends up, he says, I'm going to plot an area here. There was already a guy who, Daniel Yoakum, who had put up a tavern and a tavern, that term back in these days would be a place that you would eat and also stay. So mm-hmm. like a hotel. So he established a tavern right in this area. So he's like, I'm going to plot out these. Nobody wants this land. They're like, Independence is where it's at, buddy. And he's like, no, this is good. So he actually has to give away lots to have people even consider building on them. And he builds a two-story, structure that is a trading post because he has relationships with Native Americans. So he builds a trading post so he can, trade with travelers and traders and things like that. But nobody is following him. So he's like living in his trading post. They're like, we're not so sure about this. But then things start speeding up because then he has another idea because he's not a freaking idiot. He's like, wait a minute. I have to go as a business owner on the Santa Fe Trail. I have to travel miles. It's like almost 18 miles on horseback up to Independence to Blue Mills Landing to get my goods. That's a long way. Mm-hmm. and it's also you got to haul all the goods back.
And how long is that journey, though? I mean, you think 18 miles, that's nothing anymore, obviously, with cars and whatnot. But 18 miles back then on horseback, I mean, like, how long of a time are we talking to go that kind of distance?
That's a good question. So you always have them. So basically, about 15 miles would take you all day. They used to say, now, not if you're on horseback by yourself, that's faster.
Yeah.
But if you're hauling stuff and now like a wagon train, it would take them to get from Independence, Missouri to New Santa Fe, which is out by where I lived, Independence to New Santa Fe, that would take them all day.
Yeah. So what I'm getting at is having an outpost in Westport or Kansas City, if you will, instead of Independence, that's another day's worth of travel.
Yeah,
there's a lot that can happen between now and then.
Right.
And if something does, you don't want to haul your ass back another day because now you're adding 2 days onto the trip.
Right. And he has to find a way to ship all that stuff with him. Like, that's just a lot of operation. The other thing that was happening is Independence was hopping. And so the land around Independence started to be taken up by farms. And so when people, they call them wetting your cattle. Like, you have to actually feed and let your cattle roam before you can actually outfit them on the trail. So the land became so expensive that they couldn't do that anymore. And so the land around Westport, get it? There's not a lot going on yet.
Right.
So, hey, you can actually, have your cattle roam around and all this stuff. So there were some things at an advantage for him. But he goes out there and he's like, he's picking up these goods. This is like 1833. And he says to this steamship captain, it was on the John Hancock. Okay, that was the name of the steamship. He says, dude, I cannot, like, this is really inconvenient. There's this great flat rock landing just down the river a little bit. Would you please go down and I'll meet you there? Because it's only 4 miles from Westport, right? And he says, would you please do that? And the guy's like, I'll give it a shot. And it turns out it was a perfect landing post. And the reason that John McCoy knew about it in the first place is that it was already being used as a ferry crossing that his dad and him at one point operated. Mm-hmm. So like he already knew it was like a flat landing and it was successful. And he goes, this is great. So it became known as Westport Landing.
And so you say Westport Landing, that's a term that everybody I think in Kansas City has heard and Kansas City has mm-hmm. known. But there's no river in Westport. So was Westport Landing the River Market area? Is that what we're kind of talking about when we decide this is Westport Landing?
Yeah. So the place where he said, meet me here, would be the foot of Grand Avenue. If Grand Avenue ran into the water, that's where it was.
Okay.
So it is Kansas City, Missouri today. But at the time, nobody was there. So, and also there were super, you know, super hilly and all these things. But there was.
Did they worry about were they going to park back then? Or is that just something that we worry about in modern day Kansas City?
Wait your turn. Yeah. Because they just pull up to this one landing spot. And as, you know, the town developed, of course. So Westport Landing is what Kansas City is today. So when we say Westport Landing, I mean the foot of Grand Avenue. Like if you were to walk into the river right there.
Okay, and so what's there today where that foot of Grand Avenue is? I mean, if you're going to go down there and check it out.
Railroad tracks
right now. Okay.
Yeah. So the railroad tracks is what eventually, of course, that's what, you know, replaced steamboat travel in the first place and everything else. There's railroad tracks down there. And then there's also, you can go to the town of Kansas Bridge and walk out and actually see and look back at what would have been Westport Landing at the time, because that's where they built up businesses first. So, you know, McCoy is onto something. He's 4 miles away. And then people are like, this is brilliant. This is good. So this is actually when Westport, so the town of Westport just booms, like, bam, this is great. Great. And so now people are choosing to, because do you want to walk or do you want to ride? I'd rather float down the river to my point as long as I can before I have to start hoofing it. Right. And so that's what replaced Independence, basically the traffic in Blue Mills Landing. That's what replaced, and Westport stole that traffic by using Westport Landing and the town of Westport. So, you know, McCoy's like, cool, this is great. But he also was not one to stick around very long. So the minute that starts booming, he sells a store, he gets out, he's out of the business all of a sudden. And which is, you know, you go, why would he do that? Well, because he always had his mind on the next thing. And so, you know, he gets married. I should have mentioned that. He gets married to a Virginia chick. And, you know, they start having a bunch of kids and all the story of all of them at the time. Right. And actually, you know, the store that he sold, you know, the original store in Westport was bought by William Miles Chick. So, you know, ends up, you know, that's how they met his wife, I'm sure.
Sure.
Because of dad. And that's the first postmaster was Chick. So unlike these other founders, he just kind of moves on with life. And so then we have the story of Kansas City and how it was founded. And, you know, in a very brief moment of history here, a guy died. He was killed in a barroom brawl, to be specific. And his name was Gabriel Prudhelm. And his land, 263 acres, went up for sale. They needed to sell it for his estate. And he got caught up in some litigation. And there's like a whole backstory that we've actually talked about before. But McCoy, along with some others, saw some promise in this land because it literally bumped up to Westport Landing.
Yeah, and that's great land.
He's like, we could plot a town here. This would be perfect. And McCoy was always he's kind of our folklorist of Kansas City history because he was an impeccable writer. And so he writes about all these incidents later in his life and he calls them tales of an old timer. So he like spends his older days like reminiscing about the past. I mean, he's like Kansas City's first historian. Mm-hmm. So he tells these stories that are just hilarious and great. He says that they, you know, that 14 men, you know, there's about 30 people on the riverfront. They gather near One-Eyed Ellis's cabin, and McCoy and 13 other men, including Sublette, William Gillis, you've got McGee, a lot of Kansas City names that you'd know, Campbell, street names, a lot of people with street names.
I would say all these are street names. Yeah,
I know, right? So he gathers with them. And they pool the money and they say, we're going to purchase this. And they do. And this is in November of 1838, but it gets held up in some litigation, blah, blah, blah. So he plats the town in 1838, but then it doesn't really settle until 1847 because of all this litigation. So these guys go off and do their other things. You know, they're farming, they're creating businesses. Mm-hmm. Some of them are in the Westport area. So once it gets established, John McCoy ends up building the first brick house in all of Kansas City on what would be First Street. But if you ever look at a map of Kansas City and downtown, there is no First Street. That's because First Street was destroyed when they actually leveled the bluffs. So he was living on top of a hill is what I'm trying to tell you.
Yeah.
And there's a great story of him, you know, because he's operating the riverboat, the ferry crossing, and his enslaved woman named Cynthia, she would take a conch shell and to let them know, the enslaved and then also John McCoy, let them know that dinner was ready. She would blow into the conch shell and it would echo across, you know, the river, and they, oh, dinner, better go back.
The original dinner bell, I guess.
Yeah, huh? Dinner bell. And it, what's really cool is that the McCoy family had the conch shell in the 1920s, which is pretty cool.
That's pretty awesome. But
yeah,
I mean, it sounds like he's a guy that, you know, found an idea, saw something good, you know, started things up, and then he bounced and let everybody else kinda deal with it, you know, after that. And then, as you said, kind of like on to the next, because he founded the town. I guess you didn't find the town.
He
founded the town.
He planted it.
Never lived here. Like, the guy bounced really fast and got out of Dodge before all, you know, hell could break loose, and people were talking about a bi-state tax and renovating Union Station and a new baseball stadium.
Touche. Yeah, he really never lived in Kansas City. It's like, once things would settle, this is what his because the 14 original founders, they kind of sold off some lots and stuff like that. So between 1838 and 1847, the ownership of that town, it was called the Town Company. The ownership switched a bunch of times. So like, for example, William Gillis ended up with 3 shares instead of 1.
So at what point do you not own a town anymore and it just becomes a town? Like, well, Bill Gillis, let's talk about him and owning 3 shares. Where the hell do those go? How do you become an owner of a town? Do you get bought out by, you know, Pendergast or what?
Yeah, you buy out other people who originally were in the sale. So he bought their shares. So, each of them spent the, an equivalent amount of money divided 14 ways. And so, like one of them, Sublette, died, and he was a really famous person in history. He was actually lived in St. Louis.
I was going to say, there's a lot of Sublettes in St. They pronounce it Sublette over in St. Louis. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he died, and like the Town Company didn't even know he had died. How would you know? He's in St. Louis. Not like people were writing letters every day. Mm-hmm. His share, he was in business with Campbell out of St. Louis, Robert Campbell, who's a very well-known person in St. Louis history.
Obviously the founder of the soup.
I wish. So Campbell, his house is still standing in St. Louis. It's not in a great area now, but Campbell ended up taking his Sublette share and buying it, and then also buying other people's share. And so he was an owner in St. Louis. There's some Abraham Fonda at Port Fonda, the restaurant.
Abraham Fonda.
Abraham Fonda, he didn't even live in Kansas City either. And he was really selfish and wanted them to name the town after him, call it Port Fonda. And, you know, McCoy would joke about that, you know, like everybody was silently in contempt of that name choice. And they settled on the town of Kansas, of course. And you got to remember, McCoy was alive when Kansas Territory and then Kansas became a state. And he's watching Kansas City, Kansas. And he's like, what the heck is going on here? I mean, he lived through all of that, which is unbelievable. But yeah, in general, all of these guys, like these guys made a bunch of money, most of them. So what they did is they platted out. You got to remember, they didn't plat out 263 acres. They platted out a section of 263 acres. And so the town of east of Kansas City, I mean, the border at this point isn't even to Troost yet. That's, we're talking like Holmes. Like, that's the end of the town. And then on the other side, you know, you have Maine and Delaware. Like, it's a pretty short little squatty area.
It feels like a very narrow type of town.
So the
boundaries were Maine to Holmes?
Well, so the boundaries you have on the town, you have the river is the boundary on the north.
Right.
Fifth Street or Independence Avenue is your boundary on the south.
Okay.
And then it's skinny. It's skinny.
Yeah, skinny. That's what I'm saying. Like a long rectangle. Almost.
So you had, he had streets like Maine and Delaware in there. He had Broadway, but it wasn't called Broadway yet, which is like Front Street. Then he had on the other side, like the boundary is just after like Grand Avenue, just to the other side.
Wow.
But Grand wasn't even called Grand yet, because that came, you know, it all has to do with how the city grew together, but Grand isn't Grand yet. So it's a really small area. And so that's part of the reason why, like, to live in the city limits early was a very concentrated area. And of course, as the town grew, so what they did is they platted that area, and then they divided the different lots into different people's property. And then they would sell off the lots. And then all the other land was given to the guys in chunks, just like, here, you get this 47 acres and you get this 22 acres. And that's how they divided it. So the town company, which is really interesting, the town company itself was only in operation for 10 months.
Wow.
The minute that they actually got to be able to legally sell the land, they were like, let's go. Like, ready, set, go. And they sold off as much as they could. And then they just held on to whatever else it was that they had. And like William Gillis and stuff and Campbell, they owned a bunch of stuff to the east, which became known as East Kansas, which is now the northeast area of Kansas City.
Okay.
You know, so that again, that's where Gillis Street is. That's where Campbell Street is. I mean, it all makes sense when you think about it.
Right.
So anyway, like he didn't wait around like these other guys. They're like going to hold out, you know. Like I'm going to hold on to these lots because it's going to, the more that people build around it, the more expensive the lot will be.
Sure.
McCoy was like, that's not how you do things. You sell the lot so they build on it. And then it helps everybody out. So he wasn't the best businessman. So as everybody else was holding on to lots and became millionaires, McCoy was like, not. So he ended up really living in the farm life. So he had a farm at Linwood and Prospect, which is Kansas City today, I get.
Yeah.
But at the time, that was out on the outskirts, and that was on the road from Independence to Kansas City.
That's today now Costco.
Right by Costco, right. And he it was one of the prettiest farms, and I have, there's a picture of it I found, which is unbelievable. And he kind of had that land from about 1843 to 1862. So he really, that was like the farm. They called it, I think it was called Woodside. They had this farm that kind of became the, what was quintessential for John McCoy's family of growing up. So when they remember growing up with John McCoy as their dad, they remembered that farm, not downtown Kansas City. Like that's,
well,
it's not
funny
what it was
when
like
you think about, you know, that area, Linwood, Maine, Prospect, and even all through downtown, like to envision that as farmland just seems so weird today because there's buildings and roads and traffic, right, and all that stuff going on. To think at one point in time, like that was out in the sticks. It's like, it's crazy to think about.
And when you look at it, yeah, Linwood Boulevard, which mm-hmm. became, you know, that was originally the road to Independence. It was a state road at the time, part of the Santa Fe Trail from Westport to Independence. And he had 160 acres at 31st and Olive is like where the hub of his farm was. And there were huge elm trees and lindens that he planted on each side of the house. And like their barn was at Linwood and Park Avenue, the barn. Linwood and Park Avenue. And he had cabins for the enslaved where the old St. Joseph Hospital was, which is really close to what you're talking about, Costco. Mm-hmm. And he planted a row of elm trees at current day 31st Street between Wabash and Prospect that apparently you could see up until the 1940s. They're not there anymore.
Wow.
So again, we like to destroy, you know, a lot of stuff. So unfortunately,
yeah.
But I mean, he was a little bit on the wrong side of history, like most of Kansas City's founders, to be clear. You know, he never named a street McCoy, by the way. Even when he platted stuff, he never called anything after himself, which stands today. During the Civil War, he sympathized with the South, as did, I mean, I told you he had enslaved people. His right. father was against slavery. But you know, who knows? I can't answer why, but this is what happened. I will tell you that one of his enslaved was married to another enslaved person on a different farm, and they agreed to let, with the consent of their owners, if you will. Julie was the name of the enslaved woman of John McCoy, let her go to California with her husband, if you can believe this, immigrated to California, and they worked through out in California, sending money back to buy their freedom.
Wow, that's insane.
Is that not crazy? It took them 4 years to do it.
How many?
So, 4 years.
Four. I thought you said 40. Years. I was going to go, oh
no,
my God.
No, four. Yeah. But it's just incredible to think, again, we don't know the conditions. And, you know, a lot of people say that supposedly McCoy in Westport was willing to let people buy their freedom and then purchase lots. There's a lot of speculation. I can tell you cannot be corroborated. He never wrote about stuff like that because that's not what people were interested in hearing about. To be clear, in 1880s when he's writing, they're not interested in the enslaved, right? They're interested in like how did this town become to be? Like, you know, they're interested in a totally different thing. Sure. But he fell on the wrong side. So during the Civil War, he sided with the South, and he was one of the many men that were ejected from the area. And he actually went back to Howard County during the Civil War. His son, Spencer, was killed as a Confederate soldier. So he lost one of his only sons in the Civil War. But he comes back to, you know, he comes back to Kansas City, you know, by 1864, 1865. Comes back to the area, and he's healthy as can be. Everybody, he started writing for the newspapers when the newspapers like became like the Kansas City Journal, and he started writing stories under the name Tales of an Old Timer. And so he would tell people about the primeval forests of what was the old Kansas City and the old Westport. And he'd tell the stories with really some dignity, because he would get in fights. You know, nobody likes everybody. Right. He would get in fights with people, but the way he would describe them was just like, I remember what one guy he described as lank and cadaverous. It's like, just a total, you know, just he started Old Settlers Reunions. So in 1871, he established a society for the old men to join to talk about the old days. And that was in 1871.
And they're still doing that today at many clubs around Kansas City where all the old guys are getting, it's called McDonald's on a Monday morning for coffee, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So he actually, this is kind of interesting for the end of his life. He built a home at 7th and Olive. So he ended up in the city again. He ends up in the city again. And they say when he actually had like an infection in between his toes, he had died of gangrene, basically, which is really disgusting and horrible. But they say he hadn't had to see a doctor in the 56 years by the time he's, you know, seeing this doctor at the end of his life. So he, you know, is sitting there and he's obviously very sick and all of this, but he's able to still communicate with people. And talk about the old times and all of this. And of course, everybody comes and visits him. What's amazing to me is when he dies in 1889, and you think about all that he saw Kansas become a state. He saw Kansas City, Kansas steal our name. He saw it all. He literally was there to watch platting with the ropes and everything, town of Kansas in the town of Westport. And as he was there, you know, at the end of his life, he was one of 200,000 people living in Kansas City at the time. It's crazy.
John McCoy really was a guy for others. I mean, he founded Kansas City, never made a profit off the land, never ran for public office, and basically made sure Kansas City was here for everybody to enjoy. When he founded the town of Westport, he was one of 14 people living in the area. At the time of his death, one of 200,000 people living in the area. Imagine watching a city grow up right before your eyes. John McCoy, the father of Kansas City.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro. What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
If you're thinking about GLP-1s for weight loss, listen up. You must make sure you're maintaining your muscle mass while you're losing weight. Otherwise, you can slow your metabolism and regain the weight. Omisid, a natural superfood protein shake, has been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. It optimizes and supercharges your metabolism so you can lose weight easily. Use Omisid with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at omised.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
March Madness is here, and if you want to enhance the experience, join me, Gary Parrish, and my colleague Matt Norlander on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. We have new episodes at least three times a week and at the end of every night of the NCAA tournament. So before you go to bed, hang with us or know we'll be there when you awake. We'll break down games, make picks against the spread. Most of all, we'll have a blast. So join us on the Ion College Basketball Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.